The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
All right, as promised on the Running Plays podcast. Yo, Kara, we got somebody here. We got somebody this week.
Yeah.
We have
it's good to see
time you. Champion. We have a five-time champion as a player. Stephen Douglas Kerr is in the building. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you guys doing?
We're hanging in.
We're good.
Yeah. Aren't we all?
I was doing some research on this, and I saw your full name was Stephen, and it was spelled like Steph Curry.
That's right.
How is that weird? That it, like, I don't know if I've ever seen a coach. I know you guys' names are different, but I've never seen a coach and a player have the same name like that.
Well, yeah, and especially if you just add a Y to my last name, you know, we're right there. So. So much in common. So much in common.
Does that make you a Splash Brother?
Honorary. I'm an honorary Splash Brother.
Okay. Yeah, man. Yeah. Well, it's good. It's really good to have you on. You know, a lot of this is kind of a weird time, but the biggest thing that we've seen is obviously The Last Dance. How are you going through and watching that this series so far?
Well, it's been fun, and my family's really enjoying it. I mean, it was 22 years ago, and I've never seen any of the footage. So it's kind of weird. You know, all these memories I have in the back of my mind. And yet now I'm finally seeing actual footage. So some of the memories maybe were forgotten or distorted somehow. And now to see actual proof of what really happened is kind of fun. Some things I forgot about. And then I feel a little bit self-conscious too, you know, just watching and seeing myself. You know, when you see your younger self, it's a little unnerving sometimes, but all in all, it's really a thrill to kind of relive some of those days.
I guess as these memories come to the forefront, has there been anything illuminating for you watching the other guys' interviews? Like, oh, that's what it was like for him. It's sort of like if you're all watching the same movie, when it's over, maybe you have different takeaways, even though you're in the room together. Has there been anything that where you're like, oh, that's really interesting, or I didn't think of it that way?
Yeah, I think there's always little things that every show that I've picked up on. I think the biggest thing is that I've never seen Michael so open. And I think it's the best thing about a documentary is, you know, he was always very guarded as a player. When he was interviewed, he was less likely to say anything controversial. And I think he's just in a really good place where he feels like, all right, I'm gonna let loose. I'm gonna tell like it really is. So you see him respond to, say, the Pistons not shaking hands after that series, and you see how real his emotion is and how raw his feelings still are 22 years later. That's awesome, because we didn't really, you know, get a ton of that while we were playing.
How closed off was he? Maybe closed off isn't the right word, but that competitive fire and like that one path in mind to be the best, to win championships. What is it like seeing this new side of Michael, I guess?
Well, he never seemed vulnerable. You know, I think that was part of his persona. He was invulnerable to everything and everybody, you know, indomitable. Nobody could touch him. And he walked into that arena and, you know, he was just dominant over every person in that building, you know, opponents, coaches, teammates, referees, fans, like he was so clearly the dominant alpha male in the building. And so you never, even as a teammate, you know, you were never quite sure if he was human. He was just that good. And so that's why it's fun now to see him feel more human, more vulnerable.
And you've been around you talked earlier, I think yesterday, about the similarities and differences of the Bulls that you were a part of as a player and the Warriors that you obviously coach now. If you could say now, I know it's different on how they were covered, but how would you say which team was more covered and which team maybe wasn't? Who had the biggest circus, if you could really put your mind towards it?
Well, I think the biggest difference really is the difference in media now from back then. You know, there was no social media in 1998. Internet was in its youth, and you know, none of us really spent a whole lot of time, you know, surfing the web. We just, if you wanted information generally, you kind of, you know, read the newspaper or watched TV. And so it was really easy to escape all that. That team was a traveling circus. And so in some ways it felt very similar to the Warriors from the last few years. You know, just like with the Warriors, you know, with that Bulls team, we would land and go to a hotel in the middle of the night, and there'd be a couple hundred people outside waiting for autographs and trying to get pictures and that kind of stuff. Huge throngs of media, much bigger media gatherings than for any other team in the league. But we could always escape, you know, back then. You could just avoid it once you left the facility or the game. And that's where it's most different right now, is that players, because of the social media aspect, that just the number of outlets, it feels more relentless now than it was back then.
How do you coach through that? And did you talk to Phil before you were doing this, when it got hectic, about how to coach through this, and how did you find a way to coach through that circus that we all see?
I think we, the way we approach it as a staff is we try to talk about keeping things in perspective. One of the things we talk about every year is we would all basically play basketball for free, because that's what we've done our whole lives. And so I never feel like any of us get paid to play or coach basketball. We really get paid. And ironically, Dennis Rodman basically said this in the documentary: you get paid for all the BS outside of the game. And I was so amazed that to see his quote from 22 years ago, because I use that same line with the Warriors team all the time. And I tell them, you know, the main reason you get paid is not because you get to play basketball, it's because you get traded and cut and booed and injured. And there's a lot of difficulty that comes with all the great stuff. And so that's usually our message with the group. And, you know, we try to help the guys through however we can. But it's really an issue for everybody in modern life, not just NBA basketball players. All young people, I think, have to live in this sort of spotlight that social media has put on everyone. It's difficult. It's not easy.
You know, the Last Dance has become like a national watch party. People are so hungry for sports, and there's an intimacy seeing this stuff behind the scenes. I think about Hard Knocks in the NFL, and I think about the teams I would love to see in a program like that. The Warriors are one of those. But have you guys ruled that out? I'm sorry if you've answered this before, but would you ever be open to a documentary crew opening that door in the locker room?
I don't think so. It's very intrusive and difficult to function with something like that in place. You know, the irony is that Phil Jackson was really adamant about the sanctity of the locker room. Very few people were allowed in our locker room. when I played there for five seasons. And then all of a sudden that last season, it was, hey guys, we're going to do this documentary and NBA Entertainment's going to be here. And it was kind of like, wow, that was a shift in policy. But it that's, I think what makes the whole project unique is that everybody knew it was the final season. You know, Phil names it The Last Dance beforehand. Michael basically says, hey, we want to do this, or I want to do this documentary. Everybody says, okay, great. We just did it. And yet I think it's really unique and special, but it should remain that way because that team was unique and special. Anything else to me would be interesting, Hard Knock style, behind the scenes footage. But that season was so unique that it really did deserve its own story.
I think even the closest one, I know you just said you didn't want to do it, but I think the closest one probably would have been last season for you guys, if anything. Is there any parallels? I know you always reference last season as this is it, or this is something that is probably not going to sustain. What parallels did you get from last season to the last season in Chicago?
Well, it was there was definitely a thought in my mind from the very beginning of the season that this might be it. You know, that we didn't have a definitive answer like that team did. I mean, Jerry Krause and Jerry Reinsdorf basically came out and said, you know, this is going to be it. We didn't have that, but we had a decent idea that we weren't going to be whole again because we had several free agents. And so my experience from the Bulls basically helped shape my message to the Warriors team last year, which was enjoy every second of this and don't waste it, because you may never be in a position like this again to be able to win a championship, to have this kind of shot. And that was my message all year long. And despite the drama, I think our guys did a great job of competing and staying together. And we were right there at the end. We couldn't pull it off, but we had a hell of a season.
Hey, business owners. So defense might not win championships anymore, but when it comes to protecting your business, your defense better be the best. That's why the team at Bay Alarm brings their best every day. They're on duty 24/7, 365, no matter what, putting burglars out of business, just like they've been doing for over 70 years. It's one more way Bay Alarm puts the pro in protection. So visit bayalarm.com and get protected today. Because if your security's not the best, you're not secure. Bay Alarm. What have you got to lose?
We've talked about why that was a hard season to go through. I mean, we know Kevin's free agency was a big part of that finality to that. You had never coached someone or somebody that was that high profile of a free agent. How was that coaching through knowing that, you know, he has full rights to leave and he might leave? How do you coach through that every single day and keeping that every single day in perspective?
Well, I think we've always tried to give our players here plenty of rope, plenty of freedom, the respect that they deserve to make any decision they want to make. You know, we understood the whole reason we got Kevin is because he wanted a new challenge after he left Oklahoma City. So when, you know, he decided to leave after last season, who would we be to complain? He just saw another challenge was ahead of him and decided to make that choice. So we all wished him well and understood that he was making a decision for himself, and we all respected that. I think the difficulty just came within the season and trying to get everybody to focus on the task at hand and to worry about everything else later. And that was our main job as a coaching staff.
How much trial and error is there in figuring out what kind of touch certain players need? Who needs tough love? Who needs a little sensitivity? How on earth do you figure any of this stuff out, Steve? Is there a lot of trial and error?
Yeah, there is. I think you get a feel for each player pretty quickly. You know, as the season begins, as you begin to communicate with players. I know my very first season, you know, I lit into Clay. I took an early timeout, lit into Clay, and he didn't respond very well. And, you know, he went out and was kind of rattled, made a couple of mistakes. And I kind of checked that box. I said, Clay's not a guy who's going to respond to yelling, you know, and I figured that out and, you know, asked a couple of people who knew Clay better. And they said, yeah, you're much better off just talking to him and explaining what you want. If you yell at him, he's going to shut down. So there's some trial and error and some background. And, you know, Tom Izzo and I have become good friends because, you know, I decided I wanted to really know how to coach Draymond. And I sought his advice. And I think that's a big part of being a coach in the NBA is really learning your players and understanding what makes them tick.
Draymond said he threw away your 4-page letter. Did you hear that?
Yeah.
Was that handwritten? How much time did you spend on that thing?
I don't remember how many pages it was. It was definitely typed out on my computer. I don't do the handwritten stuff anymore. But that's something I do occasionally. I write letters. I think sometimes it's easier for a player to read something so that maybe you wait for the right time to be able to read it and to digest it, maybe look back at it again, rather than just sit across, you know, from me. And so, yeah, I do that occasionally.
I do want kind of want to get back to the Bulls, or at least Michael. We celebrate a lot of everything that he does seems to be, you know, celebrated and things like that. And everything he touches seems to be marketable, including his Jordan shoe, the flu game, and the flu game. Do you think that that'll be celebrated as much when we get back to basketball? Not the game itself was great, but celebrating the fact that, yo, he did play sick. He did do these things. Do you see that going forward of, you know, maybe you're more likely now when we come back to sit a guy out if he's sick and he might not be as celebrated up for playing and maybe putting others at risk?
Well, I can, there's a lot of different ways we could go with that answer. You know, I think as it relates to Michael in particular, you know, what I'm loving about this documentary is that it's really a great reminder to the young NBA fans and players how great Michael was. And, you know, at this point, you know, most of the players in the league didn't really see him play live or wouldn't have remembered him. And so to see his dominance and to see his personality come through and to see some of the highlights, just breathtaking. And so being there at that flu game and remembering how sick he was, he had an IV at the shoot around. We were at a high school in Park City, you know, 45 minutes outside of Salt Lake for that finals game. And he had an IV in him and could barely move. And we were all shocked that he even played. So it was truly a heroic effort.
Yeah.
So what does that mean for today's player? You know, I'd like to think we're smarter today and we've taken more decisions out of players' hands, more medical decisions out of players' hands. You know, there was in the first episode, I think, when he broke his foot, he said that, you know, Jerry Krause said, well, there's a 10% chance you'll never play again. He said, yeah, but there's a 90% chance that I will. Well, we're not taking that chance today. I guarantee you that. Right. You know, if that happened with Steph or Clay or any of our players, no way we're dealing with that. So it's a different era and a different time. I think we value players differently. We have more help medically. We understand how to work players more. terms of resting them and preparing them for the long haul of the season. So there's just a totally different
The Last vibe. Dance brings up a lot of questions about the greatest competitors of all time. There's Michael Jordan, there's Kobe Bryant, modern day, maybe there's LeBron and Steph Curry. Where does Steph fit into the conversation of competitors? Because yes, he's babyface, but he is an assassin. Was there anything that brought to light for you that is as nice as this guy is on the surface, he is deadly on the court?
Yeah, I think it's probably Steph's most underrated quality is just how competitive he is. And I think it's underrated because of just his physical stature and the way he looks. You know, he's so different from your average NBA star. You know, most NBA stars, you know, they're physically imposing, and here's Steph, and he looks like he's just another guy. And then he makes everything look so easy with his game. So you don't really see the fire that's in him, but you feel it. And when you coach him or you play with him, you understand how desperately he wants to win. You can see it in his work ethic every day. You can see it in his eyes. And he is a fierce, fierce competitor, but he's unique to himself. And I think that's one of the things that makes Steph special is that he has this incredibly rare combination of brash confidence and humility and a fierce competitive desire that's sort of disguised by this unbelievably joyful way of playing basketball. There's never been anybody with this kind of combination, and so I think that's one of the reasons the fans love him so much.
What was the first instance you saw Steph be competitive and you were caught off guard? I mean, because we all see him and he doesn't get that rap. When did you see, oh, this guy's legendary?
For real.
Yeah.
Oh, really early in my first year. You know, we see it behind the scenes. Probably in training camp, my first training camp, you know, when we're scrimmaging, you can see how much it means to a guy to win. And we try to do a lot of competing in practice. And you can see with Steph, any kind of competition, he has to win. Any shooting competition or, you know, we might have a team. We had a team bowling competition. I think my first year we had a off day in Minneapolis. We went bowling. He wanted to win so badly. Ping pong, same thing. The guy just, he has to win.
Well, he's good at everything too. It's almost like unfair that if he wanted to switch to golf or something, he could be on the tour, no problem. Like how, as a natural athlete, do you ever just want to shake him and say, how, Steph, how do you do this?
Yeah, he's like Steve Nash in that regard. You know, Steve Nash, Steve Nash came out to visit me in San Diego probably 7-8 years ago. And I used to surf at that time, and he had never surfed before. And so he decided to paddle out. He said, well, what do I do? And I'm not a very good surfer, but I tried to give him my advice. We paddle out there and I said, hey, just, you know, paddle into this. He said, what you want to do is you turn the board and you paddle, and then you kind of stand, you know, you try to stand up and you pop up real quick. And, you know, it's probably going to take a few times. And he's like, okay, first wave comes, he paddles twice. He pops up, he surfs the thing all the way into the shore. I'm like, took me like 3 weeks to do that. You know, Nash and Steph are exactly the same way. You put a ball and a stick in their hand, whatever needs to be done, they're going to figure out a way to do it. And Clay's like that too. Just, you know, unbelievable hand-eye coordination. And no matter what the sport, they just know how to do it.
I'm so interested in how it is to coach Clay and how it is to maybe get through to Clay. It seems like you just talked about it earlier. You don't yell at him. How do you coach Clay Thompson?
You really just wind him up and let him go. You know, he's just a machine. He's such an incredible two-way player. He never seems to get tired. He's one of the most unbelievably conditioned athletes I've ever been around. When you think about what we ask him to do, you know, generally guard the ball, you know, guard the other team's best player, whether it's, you know, James Harden or Chris Paul or whoever. And then if there's a screen, switch on to the big guy, go guard the big guy on the block. Mm-hmm. And then at the other end, run around like crazy, like Reggie Miller all day and 25 footers. And then do that for like 38 minutes, just constantly. Every year, Clay leads the NBA in most miles run.
That's great.
You know, track of that stuff. And every year, he's guarding the toughest guy on the perimeter and guarding everybody all over the floor. You don't really have to say anything to him. He's just self-motivated.
So you know you got a bone to pick with like a younger Clay, because he said on Instagram the other day that you dubbed him and you didn't give him, you big time did not give him an autograph during the last the last dance. Why you big time your future compadre here? Why did you do that, Steve?
You know, I looked at him. I remember the moment really well. Logan. Mm-hmm. He walked up and he said, "Hey, Mr. Kirk, can I have your autograph?" I said, "Scram, kid. Important places to be."
You can talk to this guy by the name of Michael Jordan. You can talk to this guy by the name of Scottie Pippen. They're going to be good in a few years. You don't need to talk to me right now. Is that nice to how it went?
I can't be bothered with stuff like this, son. You know, go talk to those guys over there.
Have you talked to Clay recently, like during this whole quarantine stuff? Like, where is Clay? What is he up to right now?
We did speak. We had a team Zoom last week with Bob and Rick Celebrini, and so we had a glimpse at everybody. And Clay's in Southern California, and he was his usual entertaining self on the Zoom. And, you know, he's like everybody, just waiting this thing out and just trying to do his best to stay in shape and continue his rehab. And, you know, it's all so tough, though, without access to, you know, to a gym and to trainers and all that. So he's doing a lot of work on his own, but he's still entertaining Clay, as always.
Were you surprised that he could get Zoom on a flip phone, Steve?
Shocked, actually. I didn't know that was a possibility.
Have you had time during, if this has opened up some time for you, I know you're still a busy man, have you had time to get to something that you've always wanted to get to, like a book you've wanted to read or a hobby you've wanted to take up? I mean, are you woodworking, Steve?
No woodworking. I think the biggest thing is, you know, Margo and I are empty nesters now. So three kids all have been out of the house for, you know, years now. And so to have everybody under the roof for going on 7 weeks now with their significant others and a dog, it's been total chaos at our house. And we're enjoying every second of it because we don't get this time. And so we're cooking every night, you know, cooking for, you know, these big family meals, watching a lot of movies, and trying to take advantage of all of this time together, because we usually don't get much time together at all. And obviously we're well aware how lucky we are to be healthy and safe and have the means to be able to you know, take care of everybody and not have any needs. So we're keeping that in perspective and trying to enjoy each other's company and hoping that, you know, this thing passes before too long. So, you know, taking it day by day.
How was the first week? Because we all work within this business and it's nonstop go, full go the whole time. And I'm sure you even say to yourself, man, I could really use a couple of days of just doing nothing. I could really use those couple of days. And then, at least from my experience, you go, days go by and you're like, man, I want to do something. I want to go outside. I want to do something. How was that evolution for you? What was the first week like to like now? What has that evolution been for over these last 7 weeks?
You know, the NBA season, and you guys know this, you know, just from all the travel and being, you know, being at the games and spending time away from home, the NBA season is really interesting because you go, and then as soon as it ends, to get that time, it's almost like school's out for the summer, you know, and mm-hmm. and then you take whatever time you need to kind of just get away. And so for us, this has felt like the end of the season where, mm-hmm. you know, all of a sudden the routine stops and you can sleep in and you don't have any responsibilities and you can actually get away. It's a little different because we've had to also keep in mind that we have to stay prepared in case the season does start up again. Mm-hmm. But it has been, you know, a nice kind of change of pace, just not worrying about time and just, you know, being with family and completely changing the whole program. It's a very different vibe.
What are you doing to stay fit? Do you have a Peloton?
We do have a Peloton. It's getting a lot of use with 8 people at the house. So some of that, a lot of walks. You know, I'm 54 now, so I'm not running around as much as I used to. So a lot of walks and you know, exercising at home. We have an exercise room, whether it's Peloton or you know, yoga or stretching, whatever it is, just trying to get a little exercise every day and stay healthy.
Nice. It was so good to catch up with you. Thanks. Logan, do you have anything else for Coach? Yeah, for Steve? I know you got more.
You have your phone on you right now, Steve Kerr.
Oh, yeah.
I have my phone.
Okay. Now we cover you on a daily basis, and you always trash yourself on how you play basketball. And I always feel like I have to give you a pep talk on that you weren't as bad as you say you were. I feel like I did. So what I did was I sent him 2 clips.
Yep.
One clip is from a game against the Washington Bullets. Steve, I want you to click. That's the first video I sent you.
All right, here we go.
tell the audience what you just did and walk us through the play that you just watched.
Well, it was a high screen, and I split. George Murison tried to jump out,
mm-hmm.
and so my blazing speed made Murison jump out, and he just couldn't quite veer back to where I went mm-hmm. on the dribble. And I'm thinking I missed the shot because the highlight just stops. It doesn't allow, we don't get to see the shot.
We're not talking about the negative, Steve.
Talking about
what did he do? What did he do on the defensive end right there?
He fell.
He fell.
Yeah.
Okay. Boom. Good job, Steve.
You want me to say I broke someone's ankles?
Is that yes, Steve.
Yes.
Oh, say it right now. Say it right now, Steve.
I broke an ankle.
Yeah. All right. Now the second one. Click the second one. I want you to. This is in the finals. This is a pretty big play, Kareth Burke.
By the way,
I
see what you're doing. This is the Last Dance director did this. He had the, you know, you watch the video while you're being filmed. You stole this trick.
Imitation is the biggest form of flattery, Steve Kerr.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yes.
All right. Thank God that thing went in. That's all I know.
So that is the play that is in the finals where Kerr hit the game winner. Steve, I need you to take me through that play. Give me some anecdotes. I need a fire story right now. Let's end this on a great note.
Oh, man. Can't you wait? They're going to show this in the documentary in a couple of weeks.
No, nope. Steve.
Tell us.
Wait. This is now. Walk with us. We need the play-by-play. We need this exclusive right now, Steve.
Game tied.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 20 seconds left, and we have a timeout. And the play is drawn up for Michael, shockingly enough. And I think he thought back to, I want to say it was game 3 or game 4 in Utah. And in the exact same situation, John Stockton had come over to double team him and stole the ball and made a great pass to Karl Malone that basically sealed the game. So Michael was, he was a savant. He remembered everything. And so he was thinking about that, and he kind of nudged me, and he's like, hey, you know, if Stockton comes off, I'm gonna pass you the ball. And so after I shit my pants, am I allowed to say that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, that's gross.
White uniforms that game, right?
No, so I think I had just hit a couple shots. So I was kind of feeling pretty good, and it surprised me when he said that in the timeout. But I was glad he said it, because it kind of put me in the right mindset to be like, all right, you know, I'm open. I gotta let it fly. And so I told him, I said, and it was captured on film. I think I said, if he comes off, I'll be ready or something. And the play unfolded exactly how Michael predicted, which was part of his genius. He was thinking ahead, and I got a little break too. I stepped in to make the shot easier, stepped into about 16, 17 feet. And I think John Stockton, I think he stumbled on Michael's foot as he double teamed. And so I had a really, really clear look. It was actually a very easy shot under normal circumstances, but one of those things you dream of as a kid. And so when the ball went in, it was, you know, there were two thoughts. Number one, it's like, oh my God, this is incredible. And number two, oh man, they got 4 seconds left, and they could still tie or win the game. So it's not over yet. So just an amazing moment to have as a player, to be able to feel that thrill.
And that is why you dubbed Klay Thompson a few years later when he asked for your autograph.
Yep. That's right. That was too big time.
You know, yep, there you were, bailing out Michael Jordan again. Thank you for that story, Steve. Thank you for all of your time today. We really appreciate you coming on the Run in Place podcast. Great to see you. Great to hear you. We appreciate you.
Yeah, great to see you guys too.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.